I'm on. I can hear myself. So like Dorothy said, I am Kara Lear. So Mike and Lori are my in-laws. I married the older one, not the younger one. Brian. His name is Brian. Okay, so first I'm going to start off with just letting you know what the Pregnancy Center is and what we do. We are a nonprofit ministry. We've been open since 1988, and I guarantee some of you guys have not heard of us, right? So what we do is we help the women and fathers, if they want to be involved, that find themselves facing a pregnancy that was either planned or not planned. We help everybody. We have several free services. Again, I will say free. We have free pregnancy tests. We do peer counseling. We call those people who do that advocates. While I'm talking about advocates, though, I have two of my volunteers and my charge nurse. Well, I have a volunteer and a charge nurse sitting right here. That's Maggie and Paulette. Hi, guys. They came to stare at me. We also have some male advocates that will meet with the fathers. So if the fathers do actually want to be involved, we have something for them. And we have parenting classes, life skills classes. That's my daughter, too, by the way. parenting classes and life skills classes. I lost it. Sorry, guys. It's because of her right there. Anyways, the parenting classes is a chance for the moms to earn baby bucks, and then they can spend the baby bucks in our mommy store, which is full of diapers and wipes, all the supplies that you would need for babies. And again, this is all free. One thing that we also offer is if the mother chooses to abort her baby, we have post-abortion counseling. It's called PACE, and it's something that, again, is free because everybody deserves love, and we're all sinners, and so we're not there to judge. We're there to help them move on. And our service area is Manteca, Lathrop, French Camp, Escalon, and Ripon. So we have a really large service area, bigger than you would think considering we're such a small center. When Miles approached me and asked me to come and do this, I'll be honest, my first reaction was like, no, I'm not doing that. That's no. But then I agreed to have coffee with him, and so he could tell me. And somehow I said yes, and now I'm here. I don't know exactly how that happened. It was probably the coffee. So I'm here. And whenever Miles did approach me to do this, he kind of gave me an idea of what he wanted me to, like, get across to you guys. And one of those things that he said that you have to do was tell my story while I'm at the pregnancy center. And so you guys get to hear it. Some of you guys have heard it, but this is new for some of you. So my story actually starts in February of 2008. We were in North Carolina. My husband was a helicopter pilot for this company. And on Super Bowl Sunday, we got an email along with every other person in the company that the company shut down. And that starting at that minute, it was no longer a company, and my husband had lost his job. A week later, we were driving back to California, and we moved in with Mike and Lori, my in-laws. And fast forward a few months, Brian had tried to get jobs, and you know, it was that year when the economy crashed, and it was not doing very well. In October, Brian was on his way to Florida, literally driving through Texas, and I took a pregnancy test. And surprise, I was pregnant. No health insurance, living with my in-laws. I'll let that sink in for a minute. I was living with my in-laws. And I'm pregnant. And so I was like, there goes all our plans that we had, and now I got to get insurance somehow. And the way you get insurance is you have to prove that you're pregnant. So I didn't know about the pregnancy center, which, by the way, we do offer proof of pregnancy for Medi-Cal. And I went to Planned Parenthood. And I went in, signed up, and they said, for your pregnancy test, we ask that you give us a $28 donation, which, by the way, $28 is not free, and they advertise free. Our pregnancy tests are actually free, just FYI. And so I paid my $28, and I did what I had to do to get the test. And we go back into the room, and she asked me, well, was this a planned pregnancy? And I said, no. And she says, okay, I'll make you an appointment. And she turned to her computer and started trying to make me an appointment. And it took me a second to figure out what she meant by an appointment, but then I realized she was making me an appointment to have an abortion. And I said, wait, no, I'm going to keep my baby. It's not my baby's fault. And she said, oh, okay. And she turned back and said, here's your proof of pregnancy. Thank you very much. Have a great day. And that was it. And I walked out, and I was like, that's not okay. Like, there was no, how are you feeling? Here are the resources I can help you with. Are you on WIC? Do you have a doctor? Nothing. It was just, thank you very much. Have a good day. And it just ate at me. Like, just was not okay with me. And I realized the reason I'm not okay with it is because if I was a teenager and that had happened, I would have gone along with it. Because I would have thought, well, she knows what she's talking about, and there's no other options. So I would have made the appointment. I probably would have gone through with it, and I would have been so ashamed, I would not have told anybody about it. And I would have regretted it forever. So I went through having my baby. You saw her. She was one of the little ones that ran out the door. I had her in June of 2009. And in 2010, I heard about the pregnancy center from my church. I heard that they were needing volunteers. And I was, okay, I think I can do that. Like, I'm going to go down there and do it. I didn't do it because I found other reasons not to. But then it came up again in the newspaper. And I said, maybe I should go do that. But I didn't. I put it off again because, you know, I had other things to do. Finally, it was mentioned to me a third time. And I was like, all right, God, I got it. And so I went down, worked up all the courage to go down and walk in and fill out that application. And I walked in, and first of all, they thought I was there for a pregnancy test. And I was like, no, that's okay. I'm here to volunteer. And they said, okay, well, you fill out this application. And while I was sitting there filling out the application, the ladies were talking to me, and they said, how do you feel about one-on-one, working with the girls one-on-one? And I said, that's kind of what I want to do. And they said, well, there's a training starting tomorrow. And I said, great. Next day, I'm at the training, and I've been there ever since. That was 7 years ago. And so now I'm the director, and I'm here in front of you guys preaching a sermon. Anyways, so in the training, there's lots of things that are part of the training. One of the things in the training is we don't look at it the way most of you guys are going to be looking at it. You guys probably think that our main mission is to save babies, right? And it is. I mean, that's a great byproduct of what we do. But it's not the main purpose. And for me to explain what the main purpose is, I'm going to read this Bible verse to you that is actually in our training manual. If you decide to become an advocate at our center, you have to go through this training, and this Bible verse is actually in there. It's 1 John 4, verses 7 through 11. And by the way, I'm bad at reading out loud, so just deal with me. I'm going to even do the little finger. It says, beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God, and whoever loves has been born of God and knows God. Anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love. In this, the love of God was made manifest among us, that God sent his only Son into the world so that we might live through him. In this love, not that we have loved God, but that he loved us and sent his only Son for payment for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. Now, that last line, love one another, that's the focus of our training, was how to love the mothers. Because when the girls come in, if we just say, hey, we're going to do this for you and this for you and this for you, it's not really loving them. And they need to feel loved in order to make the decision that we would hope they would make. Because what a lot of people don't realize is every one of our services, whether it's to teach responsibility, whether it's to give them free diapers or wipes or even butt cream, because we do offer that too, it's all love. It's about loving that mother so she feels supported and safe and loved. Because love is huge. And it's not always our love. It's the agape kind of love, the unconditional love. And I'll be honest, I even tell my advocates when I'm training, sometimes it's hard. It's hard to love these girls because they're not always nice. They're not always the people that you would want to be friends with. But we have to pray that God gives us his love for these girls. It's even a commandment. In John 15, verse 12, it says, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." I mean, so our main purpose at the center, when you think of the center, you should think of loving those mothers. So you might be wondering, what does this love look like? Yeah, giving out free stuff. That's pretty awesome. But it's not the main point. So whenever a girl comes in, she's scared. Even if they wanted to get pregnant, I mean, all the moms in this room, you can honestly say, at some point during your pregnancy, you had that freak out moment of, what am I going to do? you had that fear. Even the ones that are happy about it have some sort of level of fear, because change is scary, and this is a huge change. When these girls come in, their world is upside down. They're very fearful. And I was trying to think of a story to, like, get this point across of this fear, of, like, how it felt. And the story popped into my head, and I was like, oh, this is an embarrassing story. I don't know if I'm going to tell it. But I'm going to tell you. So, you know, don't judge me, you guys. I have this story where I was so fearful that it's kind of embarrassing. So a couple years ago, my best friend, who I've known since, like, I think 24 years now, talked me into going to a women's retreat. Doesn't sound scary, but it was for me. And I somehow, just like today, I said yes, and here I am, you know, here. I went to the retreat. And right before it came up, I started getting really anxious about it, because I'm not an outgoing person. And I was afraid that, you know, I would get there and they were going to be like, what's your favorite Bible verse? And I'm going to be like, oh, I don't know. So I started looking into this camp, and it's called Sugar Pines, and it's up in the mountains. And they offered the zip line. And I was like, oh, I want to do that. I want to do the zip line. But in order to do the zip line, you had to do the rope course to get to the zip line. And I thought, can do that. I can do the rope course. And I looked, and there was a picture, and there was this little teenage girl, and she's all smiling, and it's up close on her face, and she had the helmet on, and she, you know, she looked happy. And I said, well, if she can do it, I can do it. Because I was thinking of, like, the rope course in Del Oso Farms, where, you know, you start off on the ground, and then you just kind of slowly work your way up, and it's, you know, like 20 feet in the air, right? So I told my friends, we're going to do this rope course. We're going to do this. It's going to be so much fun. We're going to have great fun. And so we signed up, and we paid our money and to do the rope course. And that morning, we signed up for the after lunch group. And that morning, right before lunch, I see one of our pastor's wives. And I said, hey, are you going to do the rope course? And she said, nope. And I said, well, why not? She's like, have you seen the rope course? And I was like, no. You should go look at the rope course before you go. And I was like, okay. So my best friend and I, we walk over and we're looking at the rope course. And let me tell you, I would not have signed up for the rope course had I known what the rope course was, because it was scary. Maggie here, she was there. She saw it. So she can tell you it was scary. It was 50 feet in the air, and there were 6 obstacles, and the first obstacle was the rope ladder to get to the first obstacle, to the first little platform, which is like this big. And I immediately lost my appetite. I did not eat lunch that day. And it was our turn to go, and we did the little training. They put us in the little harness. They put the little helmets on, because, you know, the helmet's going to save my life if I fall. I'm just saying, it's not. And in the training, first I verified that, yes, those 2 little ropes were going to hold my weight, because, again, it was scary. And they said yes. But they told us, when you get to the top of the rope ladder, you have two little hooks, and you have to hook your first hook, and then you unhook the second hook, and you rehook it, so you're in the obstacle. Okay? And then they said, but at that point, it's the point of no return. You can't come back down. Because when you get to the top of the rope ladder, you're no longer hooked to the ground anymore. Because you start off on the rope ladder hooked to the ground. They said, but when you switch it, that's it. You got to go through the whole thing. You can't come down. And so it's my turn. And just as I'm getting ready to go up, the pastor's wife that told me to look at the rope course came up to me and she said, I'm going to watch you. I'm going to cheer you on. I'm going to be there for you. And I said, okay. And I climbed up the rope. And I don't remember the rope because I'm pretty sure I blacked out a couple times. but I get to the top and I say what I have to say and I hook my hooks and I turn around and then it hits me. I'm at the point of no return. I can't go back. I'm stuck. And so somehow I take the first step out onto the rope. And when I say a rope, it was a rope. It wasn't like a plank. It was a rope. And I get out and I go. And I am terrified. But I make it through the second obstacle. And the second obstacle was the one that when I think about like right now, I'm getting like shaky because I was terrified. And I get out on there. And there was these little helpers, by the way, all throughout the course that, you know, they were supposed to help you get past because, you know, they probably get people stuck up there all the time. And he was over there and he was saying, just grab onto the next rope. Just take that step. Just grab onto the next rope. Let go of that rope and grab onto that rope. And I was like, you need to shut it because I was getting angry. He was telling me what to do and I was angry. Because it wasn't helping me. It was only making it worse. And then my best friend, and this is the part where I'm kind of embarrassed, was like, you can do it. And I was like, you need to be quiet. You need to zip it. Because I was not okay. And then as I'm sitting there shaking, and I wasn't even shaking, I was vibrating. Like I was stuck. There. I mean, I could not move. I was holding on, like just vibrating. Like, I think I was shaking the trees. And I hear from below that pastor's wife. Sorry, it's tangled. And she says, take a deep breath. I'm here for you, praying for you. You can do this. You've got this. And so I took a deep breath, and I kind of moved. And then I did it again. And throughout the rest of the course, I kept hearing her say, you got this. I'm praying for you. Just take a deep breath. And I finally got through the end. I'm right before the zip line. You know, the whole point of me doing this stinking thing was the zip line. And there's this jump, and it's 4 feet. And it's called the leap of faith. And when I was on the ground, I looked up, and I was like, oh, that's going to be easy. That's not a big deal. But when you're up there, it was a big deal. And I was stuck again. And again, she said, you got this. I'm praying for you. Just take a deep breath. And I jumped. Pretty sure I closed my eyes. And I landed on the platform. And then I got to the zip line. The whole point of the whole thing was the zip line. And I went down and I was done. And I was really proud of myself, I'll be honest. But I didn't stop shaking until after dinner that night because I was so scared. And the reason I told you this story is because that's the kind of fear, that illogical fear. I knew I was safe. I knew I wasn't going to fall to my death because they guaranteed me that those ropes hold 400 pounds each, and I'm not 400 pounds. But I could not tell my body and my emotions that I wasn't going to die. And I was stuck, and I was scared. And that's what it's like for the girls that come in. They're coming in. They are so fearful that they're stuck. And if they come in and they're like helper dude over there who is telling me what to do, and I'm telling them what to do, it's not going to help them. They're going to be stuck, and they're not going to be able to overcome it. So instead, what we do at the center is we tell them, it's okay. Take a deep breath. We're praying for you. We're here for you. You've got this. And we lay out their options and we talk to them and we make them take deep breaths and make a, you know, listen to what they can do. We're not judging them. I mean, if they come in and I'm like, you know what you need to do? You need to go tell that father that you're going to have this baby and, you know, blah, 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 blah. They're going to feel judged and they're going to feel not loved. But instead, they come in and we say, we're praying for you. We're here for you. And that's what all of our services are for, are saying, we're supporting you. We're here for you. You got this. Another thing that goes along with the fear is hopelessness. Hopelessness is huge. If you don't have hope, you really don't have anything. The other day, I was with one of my volunteers, and this volunteer I've known for a very long time. I mean, she's basically a family friend. She knows my family. I know her family. She knows my past. She knows that I had bad things happen to me in my childhood. And I know that she's had bad things happen to her, and she's currently going through bad things. And so we were up front, and we were talking about something, and we looked over out our window. And I don't know if you guys know where our office is, but we're not in, like, the best place. I mean, it's not the safest of neighborhoods. And there's this lady who comes by quite often, and she's a little different. She likes to talk to herself, and not always nice. Like, she was talking to herself at this point, but she was obviously upset with whoever she was talking to that we could not see, and it wasn't on the phone we checked. And my volunteer says, what happened to her to make her break? And why aren't we broken? Why aren't we like that? You know, she's like, I know what happened to you, and I know what happened to me, and we're not broken. What made us different? And I kind of thought about it, and I didn't say anything at the time, but when I got home, I started thinking about it, and I realized it's hope. No matter what happens to us as Christians, we have a hope. Even if in that moment we can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, we, in our hearts, know. In our very souls, know it's going to be okay. There are people out there who don't have that hope. And if you don't have that hope, even little things will break you. It can do crazy things to you. So what we have as Christians is godly hope. And so we can face things that are horrible. I mean, even Jesus told us we weren't going to have it easy. I mean, he even said, rejoice in our persecution. That's a lot easier said than done. But when some of these girls that come in, they don't have that hope. Even the ones that were born and raised in Christian homes are struggling with their hope because they're thinking, it's over. My life is over. My parents are going to kick me out. They're going to be mad. Everybody is going to know that I messed up. How can I continue? I'm going to not be able to go to school. I'm not going to have the life that I always wanted. Nobody is going to want me. So when they come in, part of our love is to show them that there is hope. Yeah, it's going to stink. It's going to be hard. But it's not impossible. There's hope. In Isaiah 41:13, it says, for I, the Lord, your God, hold your right hand. It is I who say to you, fear not, I'm the one who helps you. That's what we have, and that's what we are supposed to share with other people. It's our responsibility as Christians to love other people and to show them God's hope and love. Matter of fact, in John 21, Jesus even challenges Peter. They're having breakfast. I'm going to paraphrase because it's a really long passage, but basically Jesus says to Peter, do you love me? And Peter says, yes, Lord, I love you. And he says, feed my lambs. And again, he says, Peter, do you love me? And Peter says, yes, Lord, you know I do. And he says, tend my sheep. And then on the third time, and you know Peter's getting a little annoyed by this because, let's be honest, he's human and you get annoyed when people keep questioning you. And Jesus says, do you love me? And he says, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. That's a command not just to Peter, but that's for all, the whole church. That's for everybody. We're supposed to be feeding the sheep and tending the flock. In Matthew 25:40, it says, "And the king will answer them, 'Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me.'" I mean, don't you want to treat Jesus good? And he's saying, if you do it to the least of these, to the people that have had their other people turn their backs on them, then you're doing it to Jesus. And you don't have to do it alone. God promises us several times throughout the Bible that he's going to be there and that he's going to help you. And I know for a fact that he's been in that counseling room with me, with the girls, because there have been times when they said something and I'm just like, whoa, I don't know what to do with this. And I say my little silent prayer and it comes to me and the words just out of my mouth. And it's the right thing to say because I know it wasn't from me. It was from God, and he was in that room, and he was helping me. And there are rewards. We're also promised rewards, and we like rewards. Rewards are good, right? Nobody, if you get a reward, we even like the cashback rewards. I mean, we like rewards. God promises us rewards. I have a story to tell you, because sometimes at the council, in the pregnancy center, we don't always get to see what happens to the moms when they leave our center. They don't always come back. So we never know. Did we make a difference in her life? And I have a client story. We had a client who, she came in and she was pregnant and she went through this up until the baby's first year, and she was with this guy, a guy that I would never want my daughter to be with. He was not a nice guy. And we kept kind of encouraging her to, you know, cut the ties and get away from him because he, you know, was bad. He was a bad guy. And it didn't work. She decided to move out of state with him, and she went off with him. And we didn't hear from her for a while. And then one day she came in, and she was there to see her advocate. And instead she got me. And it turns out that she had gotten pregnant again by this guy. And she had just left him because he was abusive. He had abused her. And so she left him, and then she found out she was pregnant, and she had no hope. So she went to Planned Parenthood and had an abortion because she saw no other option. And she was broken. And she came in, and she was like, "I just needed to tell somebody." And so we set her up with our PACE counseling. We have a person who has also gone through an abortion herself, and she does this Bible-based counseling with them. And it's pretty intense, but it's made to heal, to get you through, and to help you recover. And I set them up, and I didn't hear from her for a while. And so fast forward a couple years, and she comes back, and she says, "I'm good. I'm in a relationship with this man who loves me. We go to church. I feel whole." And that's all because she knew from what the seeds that were planted with her advocate, with the training for the PACE, she was able to move forward. And now she was back on track and she felt whole. To me, that's a reward. Now, I'm not saying that you're going to receive rewards every time you do good. I have done good to people and then was rewarded with not such a good thing. But that doesn't mean I'm not ever going to get rewarded by that, because my reward might come at the very end of my life, but I will be rewarded. So I'm actually almost done here, so look at that. I'm going to get you guys out of here early. yay me. So as we're coming to the close, I would like just to say that I'm not saying that you should come to my center and start volunteering right now. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that everybody has a gift. God has given you gifts because you're a Christian. And the Holy Spirit gives you a gift. Now, you might be thinking, "I don't have a gift." I know. I've been there. Matter of fact, the pastor wife that was helping me through there, one time I said that to him right before I started volunteering, actually. And he said, "You have a gift." And I was like, "No, I don't." don't have a gift, nothing special. And he's like, no, you have a gift. Everybody has a gift. And I guarantee if you ask your husband or your friends, they will tell you what your gifts are. And I was like, nope, that's embarrassing. Not going to do that. And he was like, well, here's a test. So he sent me to this website, and I tried to look it up, but I couldn't find it for you guys. But there are tests out there to find your spiritual gift. And it came back, and it basically said that I should be doing counseling or nursing or teaching, because apparently I'm good at showing mercy to people. That's a spiritual gift. So you do have a gift, and there are places you can find it. So what I'm saying, to sum it all up, is God has given you a gift. He expects you to use it for his mission. It is not just a gift that he wants you to just set it aside. He respects you, or expects you to use it. It's your responsibility. It's your job. So if you feel like the need to come to my center, come on down. It's fine. But next week you have Doug from Love Inc., very nice man. He's going to tell you about his ministry. And what I want to encourage you is, if you feel that tug from God saying, help this, do it. It's worth it. It's hard sometimes. I mean, ladies, you can agree. We hear some stories, but it's worth it. And you'll be rewarded. And just pray and reflect on what God has in store for you. And that's it. I did it.